Hey everybody, and welcome to Vassals of Kingsgrave, an offshoot of a podcast of Ice and Fire, the longest running show dedicated to George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire, and occasionally Game of Thrones, which is a very absurdly long introduction, but one that's probably more fitting today because we are actually discussing the whole concept of whether you should or shouldn't watch the show, what happens when you watch it belatedly. My name's Bina 007, I'll be your host today, and I am joined by Nadia.
Hi everyone, this is Nadia,
aka Mama Wolf from the Days of Wolfcast, and Michal.
Hey everyone, Ink Ezrain on the forums.
Oh, so lovely to podcast with you girls again. So the reason for this whole podcast, this episode of OC, is that Nadia and I were long-time holdouts from watching the show after season 4 and eventually caved, whereas Michal carried on watching all the way through because you are just so active in podcasting and the shows and pop culture in general. So I want to talk a little bit about the whole decision of whether to watch and not to watch and how that impacts the fan community before we actually get into our impressions and reasonings for why we finally watch. So Michal and Nadia, why did you originally decide to or to not watch at the end of season 4? Because that seems like the natural breaking point for a lot of people, right?
Like, it's partly my job, you know, I cover Game of Thrones. Also I like talking about pop culture stuff. And Game of Thrones is such a big part of that. And like, you know, the idea of like not doing the Vox was like very upsetting to me. And I just kind of like, I wanted to keep going. I was also partly hoping that they wouldn't spoil quite as much as they would. And they did a lot. But, you know, at the end of the day, I also think like this is a newer thing for me, but I'm ultimately pretty pessimistic about getting the book, getting Winds of Winter, certainly getting the end of the series. So for me, it's kind of like, well, you know, I remember these things, but even now I'm trying to like make a list and be like, what did you guys think of XYZ? And I'm like, it's taking me a little while to remember all the big things that happened. So if we do get it, like, obviously nothing's going to shock me like the Red Wedding, but then again, the Red Wedding wasn't a shock for me either because my sister told me about it, which is a good thing because I would have given up on the book.
So when you say that you thought they wouldn't spoil so much stuff, is that because you thought you might have had a new book by now?
Or... Yeah, I think it was a combination. I think season 5, which was the one before which George wrote this like long, depressing mea culpa about how he couldn't get the book out and he felt really depressed about it and really sad. And that was just like, well, now I feel like garbage forever, like, you know, criticizing the man. But before season 5 or 6, he wrote something like that. And at that point, it was just sort of like, you know, I'm along for the ride and I'm too immersed ultimately in pop culture circles. I follow too many people on Twitter who watch Game of Thrones. Like, it was either I watch it myself or I'm going to be spoiled. So I might as well just like go along and be able to fully participate in the outrage.
No, I get that. I definitely get that. So Nadia, you obviously took the opposite decision. I remember us talking about it on Wolfcast, realizing that the show was going to overtake the books and like, shit, what are we going to do next season? Are we going to do Wolfcast? And realizing a lot of us weren't going to do it. So do you want to talk the listener through your reasoning for giving up?
I think my reason wasn't that I didn't enjoy the show anymore, which I think some people did. You know, they thought that it was becoming too fan fiction-y for them. It wasn't like that for me. I at the end of season 4, that was the first time when it started to kind of move some of the storylines began to move beyond what we've seen in the book. In Bran's storyline, I mean, it wasn't the end of Bran's storyline in the book, but I think at the end of season 4, in the very last episode, Jojen died.
Yep.
And then back in season 3, when Talisa, who doesn't have a universe in the book, she died. But the thing was that we have spent in podcasting to be okay. We've spent so many hours theorizing about, you know, the fates of some characters. Then to suddenly have the final conclusion that, oh, you know, it doesn't matter. She's going to die or he's going to die or, you know, there's nothing's going to come of this. That just kind of, I don't know, ruins it for me a little bit. So I wanted my first opinion of the story to be from the author's point of view, not from the show, which is why I stopped watching it.
Yeah, I think I'm exactly the same as you, actually. I was never as much... I think a lot of people got very down on the show. And Mimi, most famously, right from podcast of Ice and Fire, bowed out in season 2 before it was fashionable. I still enjoyed it for what it was, even the bit that I didn't like as much. But it was more just because I wanted to read it first. And I think I had this very convinced opinion that it would be okay. It would only be like a year or a year and a half, and then I'd catch back up with everyone else. So it didn't seem like such such a big sacrifice because I thought it was only maybe a season and a half. I think I was just a sweet summer child. And then the other thing was that maybe I wasn't as in, although I was involved in the Wolf cast, I wasn't as invested, Mikal, as you were in the wider fandom. So I felt it was something I could just, mute those channels for the periods of the show and, keep up with other stuff, which proved probably more successful than I had anticipated. So yeah, it wasn't a hard decision. It was kind of weird when everyone was doing the cast and not being part of them, but it was cool, got to podcast on different stuff with different people. So what changed your mind, Nadia, and are you happy that you did?
I think it started with the novellas. When Princess and the Queen came out, we were all so thrilled to have something new from George. And we were all so excited. And I think the podcast we had was for, I don't know, we had like 10 people or 12 people on one podcast,
Yeah,
right?
it was
And
crazy, and
then,
it could easily have been more, right?
yeah. And then the next one came out, The Rogue Prince, and we weren't quite as excited as before, but that was okay. And then Sons of the Dragon came out, and I don't think any of us even considered doing a podcast
I
on
haven't
that.
even read it. I feel
And
bad. I'm such a bad fan.
yeah, no, you shouldn't read it. Like it's basically word from word taken from World of Ice and Fire. I mean, there are maybe like one or two extra details that we
Oh,
get that are new,
really?
but it's, oh yeah, it's like mostly all in World of Ice and Fire, which is the first thing that made me really angry.
Huh.
And then, when George first came up with the idea of this GRR Marillion, and he said, oh, but that'll be like after the season's done, and then I'll write this compendium about the Targaryens and blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly Fire and Blood is coming out, and there's still no sign of it there.
Yeah.
And, and then I realized that we might never get the books, but the final season of the show is coming soon, and I've enjoyed this for so many years, and if this is the only conclusion that I'm gonna get, I want to enjoy it at the same time as all my friends and family
Yeah, I think
who
that
are
makes a lot of
watching the show.
sense. I mean, for me, it was the same, right? It was this kind of slowly dawning conviction based not on really any facts, just gut instinct that we're never getting another book. And then it's like, well, I may as well watch the TV show because the whole logic of waiting for him to tell me first goes. And also, just every April, my best friend Kirillie and I go on a sort of Game of Thrones road trip, and we were coming up onto our Iceland trip, and she's always complaining that she can't talk to me about the show. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna burn through it and watch it before that and get through it. And I did. So there we go.
I have to say, I think the last straw for me was you caving in. That's where I just gave up. Yeah, because I'm
I
not sure how much you know that you were really like the bulwark against the show on the forums. Like, I think people didn't spoil it because they didn't want to piss you off. And like now it's like, oh, anything goes. Like, oh, who cares? Everything's out. It's
I feel sad for that because I think lots of people in the forums are still waiting to the end. So people should definitely still abide by the spoiler thing because lots of people are still not watching the show. So I feel sad if that's not being a bulwark anymore. So Mikhail, like you're more plugged in maybe to the wider sort of off-book fandom, but is this a trend? Are there lots of people who were holdouts who are caving as we get towards the final season? Do you pick that up in the fandoms, or do you think it's still basically there are the show watchers, the book lovers, and they're pretty much in their own lanes, and that's not really changing much?
I mean, I think they are pretty much in their own lanes because I feel like anybody who, retained an interest, like Mimi is not interested in the show. She's not going to watch it because she doesn't care. So anybody I think who retained that interest, I mean, I don't know. Like my brother still hasn't seen the show, and like his eyes turn dark and his brow contracts every time I bring up like anything related to Song of Ice and Fire. He's like, "Is this anything about the show?" And I'm like, "Oh God, I don't even know at this point." Maybe the people who have always been devoted, like primarily more to the books. That's not what I mean today, because I consider myself deeply devoted to the books. I think the people who were always suspicious of the show, I should say, maybe left a while ago. Whereas people like you guys who we're doing it kind of for the preservation of the book, but not really against the show, are sort of breaking away. But I mean, at this point, like the end is in sight. So, like, I feel like maybe last season more people did that because it was, season six and or season seven last year.
We're in the home
It's
stretch.
yeah, exactly. But it's very, the show is bigger than the books. I think we have to, like,
Oh, by far, right? By far.
yeah,
I mean, they are
like
going to be
Con of
the
Thrones.
definitive storytellers now, so
Exactly,
whether we like
exactly.
it
So
or
I think,
not.
yeah, I mean, overall, I think this has been good for the fandom, even though it's deeply traumatic for most, for those of us who have, like, been here for a long time. because we are mainstream and we are something that people recognize. So I think that, you know, it would be too bad to be totally bitter about it. But, you know, I think we just have to be realistic.
Yeah. I mean, I never got the whole kind of Dragon Demand style sort of show hatred where it sort of, you know, you have this real bitterness towards it. I just don't get that. But, you know, it is, I am sad. I'm melancholy for George. I feel it slipped away from him. But that's not D&D's fault. He did the deal. So it is what it is. Yeah. So Nadia, are you happy that you watched? Are you happy that you didn't watch? Do you think now I should have just watched all along? Or are you happy that you watched in a kind of calmer, on your own, away from the craziness kind of way?
Oh, yeah, I think it was easier to stay away from borders when you just, like, avoid social media for a couple of months every year. If it had been like, you know, oh, yeah, I'm going to watch the episode tonight or the next day, and I have to avoid spoilers constantly, I have to avoid talking to everyone, that, I think, would have been more difficult to avoid spoilers in a way.
I agree.
But, you know, doing it this way, everyone around me knew that I wasn't watching the show and I didn't want to get spoiled. So everyone was, like, really super nice. Everyone was very careful about not getting spoilers.
Were you, in retrospect, were you spoiled on anything at all or anything major when you came to watch it?
Yeah. There was one spoiler that I got. And that was accidentally spoiled by my cousin who hasn't read books or watched the show. And she'd seen something on Facebook or something and she mentioned it. And then I kind of guessed.
That was the one kind of line of argument I never got. I remember sort of Vic kind of taking the piss out of me when I decided to start watching, like, how you'll just get spoiled. It's stupid. You can't, like, hold the tide. And I always used to find that a little bit patronizing, like, all I need to do is mute Twitter and Facebook for 8 weeks a year. It's not a big deal. But I want to give massive thank you to everyone in this community who was so careful around all of us who aren't watching the show. I mean, I literally did not have a single spoiler from seasons 5 through 7, which is testament to everyone in the VOC and the podcast Vice and Fire community. But in particular, people like sort of White Raven and Varley and No True Lady, who would literally be, okay, Bina, just make sure you stay off any kind of internets today because something big happened yesterday, people are pissed off, and I'll be like, okay. So I just really want to say it's testament to the loveliness of VOC that people really respected decisions on either side of that divide in general, I feel, and were really helpful. So I did stay unsullied, and I'm glad I did it that way. I have to say, I'm glad I watched it on my own, away from the hype. I think there are things that if I had watched them week by week in the VOC community, I would have gotten far more pissed off about than I did. And also, there's something about binge watching it, like, you know, there's not the time to get pissed off about something because you're just on to the next episode. So you're just like, meh. Whereas if you had a whole week to get traumatized about it and whipped up into a fury, I think I watched it in a much more sort of zen, calm way. And I remember, like, when I was coming up to certain episodes, because I was, like, on the podcast Vice and Fire forums, like, commenting on each episode, I kind of felt that people were disappointed I wasn't angrier about stuff, especially stuff relating to Sansa, because I'm such a Sansa fan. And I was like, Casey was like, I thought you'd be more angry about this. And I was like, well, no, actually, I'm pretty, like, I wouldn't have started watching if I wasn't
I
already.
Did too. I'll
yeah. But I think it's kind of like the nature of the beast. Like, if I were in a place where I was going to get angry about departures from the books, or if I was in a place to get angry, I wouldn't be watching. Like, it's kind of like, it's almost the prerequisite of me going back to watching this is that I'm very calm about book versus show. So to me, it's just, it's a fanfic and it's a really nicely produced one, but I'm not going to get my knickers in a twist about it. But I think it's the way to do it. So Nadia, will you watch the final season along with everyone else? Or will you wait till it's over and then a couple of months and then watch it on your own?
Yeah, I would definitely. I actually, you know, the one thing that I did miss was, you know, if there was something that I didn't particularly enjoy, I could always rant about it later on, you know, Wolfcast or whatever. And I totally plan on doing that for the final season because it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, okay,
so
good.
I'm totally going to do it.
Whereas I'm actually going to try and do what I did this time, which is not watch it with you all, wait a couple of months and then just watch it on my own, which may or may not. I might cave in. I don't know. But that's the...
Aww.
I just think it's a much more generous to the show way of watching it. You guys are all so angry. I don't know. Oh,
I totally hear that. But also, like,
Yeah.
This is TV history, you know? Like, don't you want to be a part of that? Like, the final, this is the most watched show in television history. Like, don't you want to be a part of that at the end? Also, yeah, being angry is kind of fun.
I don't know, I'm pretty chill. I'm pretty chill. I mean, I didn't watch... I didn't watch The Wire when it was airing, so I watched that in my own time. Sopranos, like, famous finale episode. I watched that out of sync with everyone else. I'm pretty okay with it. And, you know, you have to remember, I'm like, I'm off Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and everything now, so it's kind of like I'm pretty detached from life. I'm so much happier, so I think that's probably a good thing, especially judging by how crazy ball season 7 was. I think it's just good for me to be in my own space. So then, Nadia, have you gone back and listened to any of the old dragon casts and wolf casts and kraken casts for the seasons?
Well, I just finished watching a couple of weeks ago, so I probably will go back and listen to some of them, particularly, you know, in episodes that I don't like, where I really don't agree with the decision the showrunners went.
Vicarious and anger.
I'll probably go back just to listen to, you know, discussions on that. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. And then before we get into sort of the changes and what we liked and didn't like, maybe just another more general one, maybe more at Mikal as well. Is this the first time we've had like a major fandom where there's been a split like this? And do you think it's had any discernible or particular impact on the VOC, not the VOC community, just the community in general, or maybe VOC in particular? I don't know. I mean, I suppose VOC in particular wouldn't have the reread without it, because that was a non-show space, a safe space for people who, and a place for us to podcast together, because we don't have shows to podcast about. But is this like a thing? I wonder if in future people will look back at sort of other, you know, fantasy fandoms and think this was a very interesting one because of how it all got paced out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm honestly fascinated by this particular phenomenon. I think there have been, I was actually on a panel about this at Con of Thrones, which was a lot of fun. We were all kind of like turning gray as we were talking about it. But I think, you know, I think that there have been maybe some like anime or, you know, other things that have existed, where, you know, the rights have been sold and the story has continued beyond like the original print version, but not, definitely not on this scale. Like Harry Potter obviously was long done, even though it started before the series was over, but they finished the series long before the final movies came out. Obviously Lord of the Rings. Yeah, I think that this is very kind of unique, and it is kind of also tied into George. So it's like at the center of it all, we have this like irascible, you know, old man in New Mexico, you know, who's like everybody kind of wants to discern his, you know, psychology and physiology, to be honest. But, you know, I think it has definitely made an impact. I think that there are a lot of, I mean, you have a whole range of people, right? You have the people who are just show watchers. You have the people who are just book readers and have never, you know, seen the show or only seen like individual scenes. And then you have the whole gamut in between. And I think in that you have a whole span of like people who are bitter, people who have, you know, taken advantage of the prominence of the show and run with it. Like, you know, like History of Westeros and Radio Westeros, like those guys have become prominent in the fandom because they started talking about Game of Thrones. You know, they weren't as famous when they were just talking about A Song of Ice and Fire. And like, good on them. I love what they do. They do great work. So I think, you know, I do think that there are a lot of divisions, even just at Con of Thrones, actually, which is obviously called Con of Thrones, so that tilts you a little toward the show. There were definitely panels where people were like, I hate what they did in the show. Like, this is so frustrating. And then you had ones that were like, we're just talking about the show here. Like, we're not actually going to delve into the repercussions in the book. So I think it's a very wide range. Ultimately, and I actually am fascinated to see what happens to the fandom when this show is over, because I don't think we're going to have another book at that point. So we will contract. So what will we contract into? You know, I think it will be good, because, like, I mean, people we know and love on VOC, like Casey, you know, came through the show, you know, so we I think as a fandom are definitely richer for it. It'll just be interesting to see how we metamorphose once again.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that too. I don't get hating the show. It's just a show. Don't watch. Like, honestly, like, seriously, it's employing a lot of people. It's generating a lot of money. It's just a show. Like, there's big important shit going on in the world that you can get angry about. This honestly isn't it. I do wonder where this community is going to go. Partly because it's the first probably major fantasy show that's happened truly in the age of the internet with everything going on around it. And I feel there'll be like, PhDs written about this in like 10 years' time, sort of analyzing. Like I've read sort of like sort of academic essays about the original Twin Peaks show and how that started off at the start of the sort of the alt news groups on the early internet, and people going back and looking at how that impacted how people analyze the show. So yeah, I think it's fascinating. I think it's so bound up in the future of VOC and the future of our podcast Device and Fire that yeah, it's going to be fascinating. But I have caved. Nadi has caved. So we're here today. Let's get into the differences between the show and the book and what we liked and what we didn't like. So for all of you out there, last warning, this is going to be spoilerific for everything, particularly seasons 5 through 7, because that's where we both picked up and joined back in. So Nadia, what was, and actually Mikal, if you can still remember, what was your biggest positive surprise of the TV show seasons 5 through 7? What was the scene or the set piece or the character that you thought, you know what, they're making this up now, this is fanfic, but I love what they're doing with this, they get it, and this is really impressing me and I love this.
I never thought I would like any of the tardies other than Sam. The show really made me, like, I actually like Randall Tardy. I always like Randall Tardy. He didn't get that particular line from the book, where he says to Rian that you need a good hard draping. So that's probably one of the reasons. But yeah, sure, Randall Tardy and Dickon Tardy, they're both pretty, decent guys, and I did not think I would like them, but I did.
I think for me it was the set pieces. I loved Hard Home, Battle of the Bastards. I thought this is where,
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
this
that
is where
was her.
HBO can do it, right? They can just throw millions at something and make it look amazing, which, I'm lazy. My imagination is not as good as HBO's, so Hard Home I just thought was superb. And then even things like, I don't know, some of the character stuff obviously is where it falls down, but I really loved the whole sequence around the death of Hodor and discovering that whole hold the door thing. I thought it was so powerful and emotional. And I was just sitting there thinking, how does George write this better than that? How does George make me feel more than this? That would be intimidating for me as a novelist, even if it was my original idea, which I'm sure it was, to think, how do I create something that's more resonant than that? I mean, that just blew me away. Mikhail, how about you? What are the things that now, looking back on it with a bit of distance, what are the things that you really admire in how they brought 5 through 7 to screen?
The final episode of season 6, I thought was genuinely tremendous. I thought that, that's the one where the she blows up the sept and everything. I was like on the edge of my seat. My heart was in my throat. I thought everything from the music to the writing, obviously the acting, that's never a problem in Game of Thrones, was superbly done. Like that was genuinely something where I was like, this is monumental. And
Good TV.
exactly. And it made me accept some things that I was not happy about. Like I'm not happy that Marjorie died, but like the way they did it, I could accept it.
Which reminds me, I also love the High Sparrow. Like I know we haven't seen a lot of him in the book, but he was like, I was kind of,
Yeah, Jonathan Pryce was some great casting.
could probably make, religious fanatic pretty easily. So convincing.
I also have to say, I did like, I mean, season 5 was pretty brutal on some characters, just getting rid of them, but I quite admired the concision of it. Just, yeah, you know what? It's really boring having Brienne trudge around trying to find Sansa. Let's just get them together really super quick. And let's just get rid of, I was kind of like really shocked when they got rid of people like Barriss and Selmy, but I could see, and Mance, and I could just see what they were doing. They were just trying to sort of clear away the decks a little bit. Like, George has so many spinning plates. It's like, let's just get rid of some of these spinning plates and then go into the final furlong and just wrap this show up. So there was a kind of
Oh,
brutal kind of logic to some of the stuff they did that it was jarring to see the pace of it, but I was like, okay, I get this. This is a show. I get that this has to be done. So I was kind of at peace with it.
I think they transferred some of Brienne's storyline to Sandor Clegane,
Yeah.
which was a nice way to get him back into the story. Because in the books, he's pretty much gone, right? But this is
Unless he comes back for Clegane Bowl.
yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then before we get into the sort of, we can do a season by season, but what was your biggest negative surprise of the show? So, Mikal, like, what were people really pissed off about? What were you pissed off about? And you were surprised I wasn't.
Yeah, definitely. It was the marriage of Sarah of I'm mixing of Sansa to Ramsay and her raping for the rest of the season, and the way that plot line ended. And I mean, that entire thing, like, still honestly makes me very upset. I don't think it was well done. I don't think it was well considered. I don't think it was necessary.
But she's gonna get raped in the
Yeah.
books, right? I mean,
I.//////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////////// I don't know about that. The line that they had said, that D&D had said at the point when it came out, was that they had this arc in mind for Sansa for several seasons, like, and it was leading up to that, which to me was baffling, because here's the thing. It's not necessary. Well, okay, I don't know that I personally would ever have been okay with Sansa getting raped by Ramsay. I'm not sure that I ever would have. However, I do think that there were ways that they could have made this more palatable. Her whole arc that season is like gaining power. You know, she comes down the stairs as like Dark Raven Sansa, you know, at the end of season four, and it's like all powerful. And that in that very episode, she's like, oh, this is my home. You can't scare me. And then she just gets raped. You know, she doesn't try and, you know, like mitigate anything Ramsay's doing. She doesn't, you know, it's all about Theon's reaction. Ultimately, she has no agency throughout the entire season. Like, even their escape is all Theon. I found it colossally disappointing. And honestly, like, it's possible it will happen similarly with Harry the Heir in the books. I can't see George doing it quite that lazily, honestly. Like, it was
I mean, like, come on. We have litigated at depth about how George is basically quite a sort of ham-fisted writer of scenes of sexual license.
At times.
So I think it's very possible. I mean, it just comes off.
You don't think, I think it's like, if you're referring to like the Jamie Cersei scene, like, I totally agree that's like a mess, but I don't think that he would approach a scene where he was like, I'm writing a rape scene in that way. Like, the way he taught, you know, Danny doesn't have like explicit rape scenes in the first book, but like when Drogo's coming to her night after night and she's like, it's like she's biting her pillow so she doesn't scream in pain, that is a very vivid, very sad part of her story. So I don't think that he would approach like deliberately writing a rape scene in that way, especially not from Sansa's point of view. You know, we're in Jaime's point of view when that bizarre scene happens.
Okay, so let's get into season five then, of which this is a big storyline. So in season five, just a very super quick bullet point summary. In Essos, you've got Dany marries Hizdar, she exiles Jorah, she makes Tyrion
completely.
She flies away on Drogon. At the Watch, you've got Hardhome, the assassination, Sam gets laid, you've got the death of Aemon. The North, Littlefinger marries off Sansa, she's raped, Reek rescued her. Not My Stannis, R.A.P. Selyse, Brienne is revenged on Stannis. In King's Landing, you've got the Rise of the Faith Militant, the Walk of Shame. In Dawn, you've got Bronn and Jaime's Dornish road trip, R.A.P. Missella, Arya training montage, kills Meryn Trant and goes blind. So that's season five. So within that, you're right. I think the Sansa thing is the thing that's big. Okay, so help me out, because I'm genuinely trying not to be obtuse here, but to me, the thing that kind of annoyed me in this whole storyline is I didn't understand the psychosexual motivation of Littlefinger giving up Sansa to Ramsay, even for, so to say, political gain in some way. He's got the Eyrie, he's got Sansa who he fancies, and that whole thing just seemed weird to me. Like, suddenly he's allying with Ramsay. So that's the thing that made me angry. That just didn't make any sense to me. The concept that Sansa,
what does he get?
He gets nothing. It makes no sense, right? So
what does he get out of it?
Nothing. And then, so that made me angry. But the idea that Sansa, like, her getting raped on her wedding night has nothing to do with whether or not she's become this kind of emo goth Elaine in season four. It's Ramsay's going to do that regardless. I thought it was actually handled okay insofar as they don't show it graphically, which is respectful. You know, they show it from Reek's reaction because that's, I think, just a gentler way of showing it, maybe. And I loved her character thereafter, that she becomes this very sort of hard, cruel, almost cruel in reaction to it. You know, that gets rid of every shred of romance she ever had. And I just didn't, I think I'm missing something because I'm not getting angry enough about it. It genuinely just struck me as a really well-acted storyline, and I didn't mind Reek rescuing her, and I just thought she becomes this badass Sansa 2.0 afterwards. And when she talks about it, she's talking about it, I think, with Jon or someone. She says, you know, he really hurt me. And I don't mean he sort of, you know, he hurt my romantic heart. I can still feel him doing things to me. Like, you know, there is due thought to her trauma. And I don't know, Mikal, help me. Or Nadia, like, where do you fall between me and Mikal in our reactions to this?
Yeah, what do you think, Nadia? I'm interested.
Yeah, I think I agree with Bina. I don't agree with how the storyline came about. Like, Littlefinger had a very clear plan on how he planned to keep on controlling Sansa, right? Because that's the one thing he doesn't want to let go. He wants to have cats right? And this is the only way he's ever going to have her. I'm going to let Sansa go willingly. His entire plan of, you know, having her marriage to Rhaen annulled and then marrying her off to Harry Harding and then arranging a convenient death for Harry Harding and then, you know, it goes on from there. But it basically, his entire plan rests on being the role of Sansa, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Why would he give it up to this complete stranger he knows nothing about?
Yeah.
And this,
I mean, the reason why he, like, the reason why he did that is because they wanted to have Sansa get raped by Ramsay.
He's in control of Winterfell.
Yeah, so that's, like,
exactly.
Stupid writing.
It doesn't
writing.
Make sense even in the show. It doesn't make sense even in the show. Like, giving Sansa away to Ramsay, he loses whatever control he had over her, but through which he also lose control of the North, right? Which was why he took and hid Sansa. And he's basically declared to the whole world that he has her. And that's just stupid, like...
Why, so how do you feel, Nadia, about the specific thing about how the rape is depicted or the aftermath of it, which is what Mikal seems to be more objecting to?
Yeah, I was actually fine with it because if you look at the book, it's basically the exact same thing that happens to Jane. So it doesn't really matter if it's happening to one female character or the other, as harsh as that sounds, because we don't have that emotional connection to Jane that we have to Sansa. So I think it'd make more sense for her to be in that particular scene. If you know, forced her into that storyline, then, you know, we can't change Sansa's character. And I think it's fine because we didn't actually see the rape scene. Like Bina said, it wasn't graphical. It was more Theon's reaction to it.
So okay, Mikal, what are we missing? Because I like to think we're sensitive.
Yeah, exactly.
Right on, sisters and feminists. Like what are we not getting? And
no,
I think this
no,
is a I classic mean, example, I think, of watching this on your own and not in the hive mind. But yeah, preach.
No, absolutely. Like, I think that is definitely a big part of it. I mean, there's so many things about it that, like, bother me in terms of, like, I genuinely think that, like, rape should be treated very carefully on television. And, like, not that a show can never do a rape scene by any means, but that, like, it has to be super considered and it has to be more centralized because we're so used to it, especially shows like Game of Thrones, like, people are getting raped in the background in some scenes, you know? And it's like, to me, this was just kind of part and parcel of their, like, oh well, men like Ramsay rape, so Sansa's obviously going to get raped, and she, you know, can't possibly have, you know, gained any wisdom about, like, how to deal with men or attempted any, you know, strength in that arena. Like,
but exactly,
also the fact that Littlefinger, what?
Yeah, it sounds like you're giving her too high a bar. Like, what is she meant to do to stop him?
No, not that, like, she could stop it, but I like, envision that scene of her being, like, you know, because Littlefinger has asked her, like, oh, do you want to do this? And she's, like, she, like, agrees to do it so she can get Winterfell. And then she has, you know, that scene with the girl who dies at the end of the season about how she's not afraid. So in my head, like, you know, Sansa could, like, sit down on the bed and be like, my lord, tell me about yourself. You know, we're just married. Like, she could have experience, like they're not in that, like, Sansa should have stopped her rape, but ways that the show could have presented Sansa being in a stronger mental position.
I think the way they show that is in her reaction. You imagine a Sansa pre-Elaine, pre the transformation in season 4, going through the same thing, making an arranged marriage to sort of, you know, A, she wouldn't have done it with that same kind of agency. She would have done it just to please someone rather than because she wanted something, aka the North. But B, I think the recovery from it, I think, you know, pre-Elaine Sansa, it would have broken her utterly. Whereas post-Elaine Sansa, who did do it for politics, who takes some sort of agency in that decision, I think has this, not recovery, because of course it's a brutal, brutalizing experience, but she becomes so strong on the back of it. And I think that aren't they showing the character? I mean, you said it wasn't a centralizing thing. I think, like, she's one of the central characters by the end of season 7. You know, she's standing there very powerfully of all the remaining major characters with one of the major character arcs, and this rape has been one of the key things. And I don't know, I mean, it felt to me like it was a very powerful reaction to it.
But, like, that's also after they had several seasons to hear people being like, we're really upset about this. In season 5, I really don't think that you see much of Sansa's, you know, quote-unquote growth.
Oh, no, because
or...
she's just being rescued at the end of it, right? So it's
but
on season 6
and 7.
But
why is she being rescued? Like, you know, like, there's zero agency. There's nothing that is going on. And, like, I just, like, Sansa is hated by so many people to begin with that, like, to me it was like, you have to give her a little more, you know, like.
But they do in 6 and 7. I think you're asking too much of them.
People hate her for it, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know. This is always thought. Maybe it's just because this is what I thought would always happen to Sansa, that this is her arc, that she starts off as a snotty little romance, capital R kid, and we see her like fall into deep depression during and after her marriage to Tyrion. I mean, I think she's clinically depressed in that book when you do a close reading. And then she starts to take agency, albeit in a ham-fisted way, with Meryn Tran. And then she goes through puberty, which is hugely significant. She becomes the Elaine character. And then I think there is going to be a brutal rape, and that this is going to be key. She's going to become this badass. And I think that this is exactly what I think is happening to her. So maybe that's why I don't find it shocking, or it doesn't piss me off, because I think it's an awesome character arc. I think it's just, you see so much sexual violence in these books that just breaks women, or where we don't get to see the reaction to it, or it's just a horrible, depressing, sort of broken reaction. And here's someone who seemingly is in such a power position by the end of it. I don't know. Yeah, it just didn't bother me. Really didn't bother me. And I apologize to any listener who's getting really offended now, because I know some people will be. And I'm just, it's a blind spot, maybe.
Oh, no. I'm not offended. I think it's really interesting.
Some listeners will be, though, I'm sure.
To me, like, this is like, I'll never feel the same about Game of Thrones after this. Like, they're always in my bad book. But I think it's really interesting. And like, I, you know, obviously, like, I think you guys are both very smart, incisive viewers and readers of the book. So it's really interesting for me to like hear how you perceive it.
We're also both like ardent Sansa fans, so maybe that's coloring us a lot.
Yeah.
And weirdly.
Yeah. I mean, but to me, like, honestly, seeing that happen to Sansa was like so devastating. Really? Like, I remember sitting there on the couch, like watching and being like frozen in horror, and just being
I was actually relieved. I was like, this could have been handled in so much more of a crass manner. This is actually relatively, you know, sort of like respectful from a GOT perspective.
Well, I mean, also I'm not sure how old Sophie was at the time, so
yeah,
I'm not sure how much
the issue I do have with Sansa's storyline is that she did not have enough time with Littlefinger to acquire, you know, to become the politician that she's supposed to be.
That's also true.
Like, she's had, yeah. So she needed more time just to be, you know, to be her Littlefinger student.
But that's true of all the, you know, if you think there are two major and one minor education arcs in Feast Dance. So the two major ones are John and Dany learning to rule Vailing, which adds piquancy to their later decisions, one hopes. And then there's also the Sansa learning from Littlefinger. None of them have time, because this is also compressed. And I remember thinking, when John is assassinated, then is brought back by Melisandre, that a lot of the emotional weight from that was taken out of it for me, because we need to see him try so hard to do the right thing, but get caught between a rock and a hard place and fail, to add emotional heft to him being knifed by his people. And we just didn't get that right. And the same with Dany. So I think you're right, Nadia.
Right.
So the other big thing in season five, which I realize in retrospect was a huge thing, and I absolutely know now that's what Varley and Julia and Brett were telling me to stay off Twitter about, was hashtag not my Stannis. Nadia, how did you feel about this little juicy nugget?
I always loved Shireen, like, from the very beginning, you know, where she's teaching in the show, like, not in the book, in the show, when she's teaching Davos how to read. She's like a very innocent part of Game of Thrones, and you don't have many of those characters. And she's not just innocent, she's
pure,
you know, she, exactly. And to have that happen to her, it was so painful. Like, that was probably the worst thing. Like, her own parents gave the permission for Melisandre to burn her.
Yeah, it was so ridiculous. I have to say, I didn't get angry about it, just because Stannis, I feel, had been... You could just see stupidity coming in the way they were treating Stannis' character. And I like him as a character. I'm not as much, you know, you've got real Stannis fans out there. So it kind of annoyed me, but I was able to sort of mentally compartmentalize it. So again, I think that was a benefit of watching it away from the fandom. But I can imagine if I'd have been watching it with all of you, Mikal, getting really like pissed off about that. It was just ridiculous.
Well, I got more upset. I had written off Stannis, because they clearly didn't understand the character, and they just kind of had him flailing about doing random things. You know, I mean, even Stephen Delane has said, like, he's like, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. Like, nothing seemed to connect, nothing made sense.
He's like Littlefinger, kind of isn't he? Yeah, what's your motivation here? I don't know. Character X needs to get to point Y, so I'm going to do something now.
Exactly. So, like, to me, that was, like, that kind of added more of the sting. Like, when Stannis burns Shireen in the books, which is going to happen. I'll still be incensed, but
Wait, you think it's going to happen in the books?
Oh yeah. Oh man, they came out and were like, the when George told us about this, we were shocked, and it was like they were so clearly covering their ass on this.
But George could change his mind. George told him shit 10 years ago. He can change his mind. That's true.
But I think
even if they hadn't said that, there's this prophecy about Shireen that I think Melisandre has the prophecy about Shireen, where she sees these. I don't know.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of king's blood. There's a lot of like, oh, maybe Shireen's actually still like sort of dead anyway because of the grayscale, and the grayscale's going to come back.
I think it's because Melisandre thinks about her like that. Like she thinks of the smell of death coming from her or something. I don't remember. I have to look
it up. I just thought that was plaguey
like,
stuff.
It prophesies like Shireen.
Yeah, and there's skulls when she looks at Patch Face, right? And like...
I just thought that was plague. I mean, I think it's douchey if they kind of cover their tracks by saying, well, George told us. That's kind of stupid because that's a spoiler. So bad on you, D&D. Oh, yeah. That sucks.
But then even in the book, we have like multiple characters trying to get people of King's Blood away from Stannis. Like, right, first was Deva Seaworth, who got Edric Storm. And Edric Storm was Stannis' own nephew, even if he was bastard. He was a Stannis' nephew. And Stannis was like Davos was convinced that Stannis would burn her, which is why he took the massive step of getting out of the storm away. And then Jon, when he had to send Mance Rayder's son away, because he thought that Stannis would cave into Melisandre's demands and let her burn him.
Yeah, you're right. So this is plausible.
And, like he sent like both Mance Rayder's son and Maester Daemon away because he was like, you know, if they figure out he's a Targaryen, he's gonna die too. So you know, it's been happening in the books all along.
So then why are people getting pissed off about it then? Like if it's gonna happen anyways.
I think people
were less upset about Shireen. The Shireen thing was, at least I can only speak for myself, it's more the how, again, like the, you know, the fact that like this kind of read to me as like they just need to clear the decks of this plot line. They need to get rid of everybody. So of course the second Shireen dies, her mom commits suicide because that's another character they never understood. Then of course Melisandre escapes with basically no consequences and like gets the hell out of Dodge. George is kind of the master of consequences, right? Like I anticipate there being much more experience with this than just that. But I will say that like I found that scene profoundly upsetting. Like maybe
more
upsetting to watch.
But that's,
you know,
good TV.
Sure, of course. But I still did.
But there was a lot of this that was just such a race through. And I remember getting to the end of season 5 and being, oh shit, they did feast dance in one season. Whoa. I mean, like the two baggiest books, and they just motored through. Like I hadn't realized that's what they were doing. I know everyone of all of you knew that. But to me that was itself a shock, and I was like, oh shit, okay. And you see that,
they
right?
They did away with so many of the storylines. Like they just erase Quinton, that's like 5 chapters right there. Then they don't have fake Aegon. That's, you know, a lot of the storyline goes with that, you know.
So get rid of Mance, like, get rid of Barristan Selmy. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, they've just cut away a lot of stuff that was going in different directions. So they've kind of condensed it to this one central, you know.
Which I don't mind. I mean, maybe they did the pruning too harshly, but I'd rather have the pruning too harshly than the bagginess of Dance. So I'm kind of like, that's fair enough, I think. And then to balance against all of that, so Mikhail, in retrospect, which was, did the Sansa thing cause more trauma than the Stannis thing in Valk?
I don't know. I was very like blinded by my own feelings, and obviously still am to a certain degree. I know that I think that a lot of people sort of expected, oh, you know what it was though? I think people weren't sure if Stannis was dead because they have that scene really weird where, like, you know, they don't show Brienne killing him. It's like, okay, well, that's the one point where they show a little discretion for the viewer.
Yeah, that was weird.
Sure why.
That was weird.
So people weren't sure if he was dead. So it was partly like, it was part rage on a lot of people's part, and part acceptance because, you know, when you look back, it was kind of clear that they didn't know where this character was going.
Yeah.
And like, and but then also that like, but is this story over, or are we going to have like, you know, badass Dannis re-rallying troops, you know, like joining with Brienne who finds forgiveness in her heart or something like that?
Oh God. For me, that wasn't the weird part of that scene. It's just that Brienne suddenly comes across Stannis, who's like the one person left standing with the entire field. And Ramsay Bolton, who's out for Stannis' head, is nowhere to be seen.
I know. Like, yeah. I know.
it's so convenient to find him and kill him. It's a very forced scene.
As amazing as the Battle of the Bastards is, like the Battle of Ice, what's supposed to be the Battle of Ice, is so hilarious.
Oh, terrible.
The thing about Game of Thrones, right, is like it does reach some incredible highs. It really does. But then when it goes, when it hits those lows, it's quite appalling. Like, yeah. not to segue into Dorne too early, maybe, but like all of Dorne is like, what the fuck?
This is very boring. Like, you got this Bronn and Jaime Dornish road trip, which was kind of funny. I was like, okay. I just didn't give a shit about any of that. Marcella dies, whoopee, great. Even the Arya stuff, I don't care. She kills Meryn Trant, goes blind, whatever. Death of Aemon, okay. Not as sad as it was in the book, so whatever. Drogon.
Well, I'll tell you what bothered me about Shireen. Not Shireen. We did that already. About Marcella. It was just that, like, they had started this plot line where it's like, oh, she's going to be, you know, a person. And then, like, she was this kind of, like, very silly little girl who then, you know, is killed by the misplaced anger of the Sand Snakes, which to me, it's
uninteresting. Don't care.
Yeah, but I get why, like, they made Ilaria more bloodthirsty, but at the same time, it's like, that's a really powerful character in the books, that she is totally uninterested in this. And like, if they could have incorporated some of that, like, even have the Sand Snakes were crazy stupid anyway. I heard somebody say that they basically put all 7 Sand Snakes in a blender and then poured out what came out into 3 different cups and gave them different names and a weapon. So like, that's
okay though.
Too
many Sand Snakes anyway.
Oh no, not in terms of there not being 7, that's fine. But just in terms of them having like distinct personalities.
Oh, okay.
There are 8 Sand Snakes, just to point that out.
So
Dawn, Jamie. I mean, I think actually the big thing I realized in season 5 is that as much as I want things to be compressed, because Brienne doesn't change as a character for her wandering, but Tyrion and Jamie do change in Feast Dance, and Tyrion becomes really dark and Jamie becomes distanced from Cersei. I mean, that's kind of like the whole reason why we need to have the step scene and everything that comes afterwards. And it's just like, you suddenly realize, or it dawns on me, okay, so Tyrion, they're going to just keep as a nice, wise guy because that's what the fans love. Huh. Okay. Well, that's a bit boring. And then Jaime is just gonna basically keep on being Cersei's lapdog, at least until the very end of season 7. And I was like, okay, so one of the most interesting character arcs in this book that I'm really invested in is not gonna happen. And that was sad to me. So I think that didn't really truly dawn on me until season 6. But even at the end of season 5, I was like, okay, so we're not gonna have the space now for Jaime to become independent, are we? So that was sad to me.
Yeah.
They slam on the brake on his character development. Like, they kind of go partly where the book is, and then they either slam on the brake or pull reverse, you know. They really kind of go backwards, or he throws in his lot with Cersei, and that was like, you know, that wasn't fun to watch, because it is such a compelling part of the story, and one that, you know, even of itself causes so much debate, you know. So to see that kind of negated was very disappointing. I didn't expect them to go dark with Tyrion, though. They like Tyrion way too much to have him, you know, skirt much of a morally ambiguous line, I think.
I mean, it's a commercial enterprise. He's their most popular character, right? So to a certain extent, I'm surprised they went as dark as they did with Arya, especially when she's in Winterfell sort of messing with Sansa. I was like, oh, they really are going for it here. So
guess who the internet was rooting for in that situation.
Yeah, I know, that's because you guys are a bunch of psychos. Psycho apologist.
I was like, guys, Sansa's asking her sister why she has a bag full of face skin. How is that not normal? Like, how is that wrong?
Yeah.
I want Arya dead. Arya to me is in the same category as dragons. She got to go. She got to go. Okay. Like, on to season 6. Actually, I mean,
Hold on. We didn't talk about the Walk of Shame.
Oh, that was awesome. That just comes out of the category of, like, amazingly filmed, amazingly acted. Just went to Dubrovnik just over a year ago, recognized all the streets, loved it. Oh, everything to the Faith Militant and Cersei in season 5 was to me a total highlight. I loved all that stuff.
Yeah,
no, that was good. The Walk of Shame was good, and I think that they played a good line of, like, where you are in the book of like both being kind of satisfied and also being horrified and like both rooting for and against Cersei at the same time. So that I thought was well done.
Yeah. It's a delicate
line. And I think they captured how well, you know, how long it takes to get from one part of you to another. Mm. Like the scene itself is so long, you get how, like at the beginning, Cersei walks out, she's got like her head held high and, you know, but then it just keeps on going and going and going and you start seeing your shoulder fall and it's just terrible. Like,
yeah, Lena Headey.
I hate Cersei.
Very,
but
very
then
good.
Fear for her.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think her face is like moved much since season one, like maybe an eyebrow or two, but like, yeah, she's very, very powerful in what she does.
Yeah, it's a great part. Okie dokie, on to season six. So a summary of what happens, broadly speaking. Sansa and Zombie John defeat Ramsay Bolton in battle, but not before Rickon dies. No. R plus L equals J is confirmed. Tree Bran is still ambulant. Shocking. Cersei tortures the Great Sept. Loras and Margaery die. Tommen tops himself. Sand Snakes kill Doran, ally with Queen of Thorns. Arya kills the Wave and returns to Westeros. The Hound lives. Jaime takes River Run and kills the Blackfish. Arya kills Walder Frey. Sam goes to Old Town via his family. Nicks his sword. Dany takes command of the Dothraki, then flies back to the Battle of Meereen. Dario is left in command. Dany goes to Westeros with new allies, Theon and Yara, after the Euron coup. Other stuff happened too. But it doesn't feel like there was as big of a single issue or issues like Not My Stannis. So what was the biggest touch point in this season? Like, what were the things that people got really angry about, Mikal?
I think probably the anything like the beginning with Dorne, people were definitely like, all right, what? okay.
I wonder why.
Yeah, right. It's baffling. I think that people were maybe upset about, like, at least I was upset about the Rickon thing. I thought that was really a bummer.
Oh, that was so brutal, about, but so well done. Yeah, he's here.
That
he's running.
Though, like,
he's not here. He's dead. Fuck. Oh,
it was actually so funny. The actor Art Parkinson like wrote on Twitter. And you know, like it's also crazy because like, you know, I remember when the show was greenlit. I remember the day these kids were cast and like writing to them on Twitter and being like, you know, when they were like 8 and 9 years old, being like, oh my gosh, you're gonna be so great. This is gonna be amazing. So like Art Parkinson's been on Twitter also since like 2011, and like to see him grow up into an adult and finally like the final thing of his Game of Thrones experience was writing should have zigzagged. and then like Twitter was yelling like zigzag
brilliant.
Yeah, but that plot line was a little disappointing in terms of like how they got rid of Osha, you know, and some of that, like, definitely not my personal favorite. Like, again, just kind of people could have been in powerful positions or at least made the most of their end, but it's all kind of in service to the bad guy. So not my favorite. Also, the Umbers are like super evil in the show.
I know.
For family, whatever, but like, it's tough.
I still can't believe John killed Ollie. Yeah. That was a bit
harsh. I know.
That was brutal. Ollie and Rickon are the two most like hard done by kids in this season. I thought that was pretty sad.
And people are like, oh, that stupid kitty betrayed him. I'm like, did you guys not remember that the kids saw his entire family slaughtered by these same wildlings? Like, not other wildlings. Tormund and Ygritte. Like, that is who killed them. And then he's like seeing Jon do this. Like, it makes perfect sense. And then they're like, oh, I hate that kid. Kill him. And
it was really funny because just after watching this, I was literally 5 days later standing in the bit of Iceland where they had filmed the attack on the wildling village, and our tour guide was like showing us like screenshots of when that attack happened and Ollie's family being killed, and was saying, and then this is how it ends for Ollie. And I was like, God, you know, John, you lack of empathy bastard. I mean, literally bastard. I mean, come on, what are you doing, mate? Yeah. Well, not bastard, as R plus L equals J tells us. So, yeah, that was brutal. In general, I didn't have many issues with this. I wonder, however, if we need to have a conversation somewhere in Vok, not today, about the treatment of suicide in Vok. We talk a lot about how rape is treated and sexual violence, and is it given due care? Feels like a lot. It seems to have become like an easy plot thing. Oh, we've got a character now who's kind of at a loose end, like Selyse, like Tommen. Let's just get them to commit suicide because that's just a quick and easy way of getting rid of them now.
Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you, Selyse, I 100% agree. That was 100% just like erasing her from the name board that they have. I actually disagree in terms of Tommen, because I thought that they had played that pretty well in terms of him really being like, he really wanted this marriage to work. He, you know, we, obviously, unlike in the book, they're actually sleeping together. He was very much in love with her and like was following the faith and kind of doing everything that like to get her freed. And then yep. for Cersei to be the one who's responsible for her being murdered, and like all, and for his spiritual mentor to be murdered at the same time, you know, and like, you know, half of the people he knows and has grown up with, like, to me, it actually A, made a lot of sense, and B, was a really interesting twist on the whole, like, you know, despairing princess throwing herself from the tower. Like, I thought,
that's interesting.
It was really kind of, I hate to say this about a suicide, especially of a child, but it played almost romantically for me, in that, like, I sort of kind of hope that, like, the small folk are telling each other, like, romantic stories about, you know, King Tommen, who loved his lady so much that he, you know, threw himself off the tower when she died and, you know, joined her in the
afterlife. Well, that whole trope is so problematic, isn't it? Anyway, but that's for another
day. Oh, no, it's problematic, but, like, I prefer that to, you know,
But I love the whole burning of the scepter bit. I just thought it was all brilliant, I have to say.
Yeah, and the tension was so crazy. Like, I haven't watched any of this again, you know, for multiple reasons, but that particular scene, even though I loved it a lot, I can't bear to rewatch it. It's way too tense. And, like, you know, especially because I really like Marjorie, and, like, just seeing her being she knows what's going to happen. She knows.
Exactly, when she figures it out, that is, like, that's an amazing scene. It's so well acted. Like, when she figures out what's about to happen, like, she knows that something's wrong.
Yep.
And for all of you who are missing your Natalie Dormer fix, I can strongly recommend watching the new remake of Picnic at Hanging Rock, which is an all-time Australian gothic classic. It stars her, she's all over it, and it's an acting masterclass, so go watch that. Sorry, Nadia, continue.
She's so good.
Yeah.
I think we do have to thank the show for bringing her to the prominence that she was, because she's
a damn good
actress.
Already because of Tudors? Really.
She was. Maybe I'm biased, but I do feel like people really were like, oh my god, you know, like the Tudors was kind of like soapy, terrible.
But honestly, Picnic at Hanging Rock is so good on so many levels.
It's Amazon, right?
Yeah, and not because I want to vok about it with you guys, but you'll need to watch it. Okay. But Natalie Dormer for the win. I loved everything to do with King's Landing in this season. I did not love everything to do with Jaime and Riverrun and Edmure and the Blackfish. That was just all stupid.
Why would Blackfish do that? Like, why would he escape? Exactly. Why would he die for nothing?
I mean, I could really basically hear him saying, like, well, the writers tell me that they can't write any more storylines for me and can't afford to have me on the show anymore, so I'm just going to commit suicide.
Yeah.
You know, it was.
So I don't think it's okay to use suicide in that way and mentally.
I agree.
Yeah. It's not okay.
I think maybe part of the difference, Bina, is just, like, Tommen, like, it's not a good thing, you know? Like, it's a very sad thing that he has committed suicide. Whereas for, like, the Blackfish, I feel like it's like, well, he went out like a warrior, and it's like, but that was completely unnecessary.
And that's, I think this whole River Run thing is when I realized how I wasn't going to get, like, there's no point, like, caring about Jaime. It's kind of like, just disassociate from yourself from it. It's going to be like Stannis. They don't know how to handle this character. Just, it's fanfic. It's bad fanfic at that. So just ignore it. So anything else in this season that was good or bad? Or R plus L equals J confirmed? Did people lose their shit? Did all the R plus P equals D kind of people, or whatever it is, like, start, like,
D, yeah,
I think that was R plus L equals D.
F plus G equals H. I mean, like, you know, yeah, it was shit hitting the fan.
I think I think it was kind of the combinations you'd expect. I think a lot of people were, like, almost taken aback that they confirmed it, you know, because it was, you know, to see that so blatantly, you know, it's a little, it does kind of shock you a little bit. So, I mean, that was my reaction anyway. Not that I was surprised.
I was almost relieved to see it. It was like, okay, finally. Okay. We all know it. It's like, you know, if you know someone's cheating on someone else, and then finally it comes out, and it's like, finally, like, we all knew what was happening anyway.
So, I mean, I don't think anyone was, like, beating their breast, but I think that, it was maybe kind of like a, what's that you guys said about not spoiling anything? You know, because they kept saying, like, oh no, we're not really going to spoil anything. And then it's like, all right, cool.
I don't get how you get to the ending without confirming it one way or the other. Like, Jon's parentage is the whole point of this series of books. So at some point, Bran's going to have to spill. I think I was more shocked to see Bran make, I mean, I love the whole Hodor. I mean, that's just amazing, right? But I was just shocked to see Tree Bran not stay Treenet. I was amazed to see him back at Winterfell.
Yes.
That to me was more jarring. I was like, but then I was like
Yeah, I
thinking
thought
to
he was never
myself,
coming back.
well, how does he get the knowledge out then if not through that? Does he do it through dreams, three-eyed crow dreams? But it was almost like, why are you back? That's just annoying to me. Go away again. There's too many Stark kids now. Fuck off. Because you're not really a Stark anyway. So you're just standing there being all sort of Legolas-like and making these grand pronouncements from a distance. And it's just weird. So, yeah. But I really like the way they did the flashbacks, though. Thought that
Yes,
was like
I did
eerie.
like it too.
Yeah.
And the Tower of Joy, it was cool to see. It just was.
Yeah.
There were some things that
It's
like I just
weird
have to be
that.
like, I enjoy watching this, just as
Yeah.
a
I want to see the Tower of Joy. This is cool. Like this
Yeah.
is what TV can do. It can visualize something of me that I've been imagining for like 20 years. So, you know, good on you.
It's weird that Bran seems more Stark-like when he's in the visions. Like when he's watching the whole Tower of Joy thing unfolding, he wants to go, he wants to follow his father, he wants to see what he's doing. And he's out of the visions. He's like this like robot-like person who doesn't feel anything. So it's really weird to go from one to the other.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of awkward.
Yeah, I do have a lot of beef with the way Bran develops. Like, I was shocked to see him leaving the tree because in my head, like, I thought that like the whole point of his arc was that he doesn't leave the tree because like
Yeah.
that's like the final decision he's making. Fine, like I don't care, whatever. That doesn't bother me. Whether it's the same or different, that's fine. Did you guys like? Do you not like Isaac Hempstead Wright anymore? Like, do you not want to write him as a character? Because like he just turns into like this zombie. Just kind of like,
It makes no
oh.
sense.
I
It's
shall
just
say
stupid.
the past. Yeah, and like, again, a character that we've seen from a kid. Like, we already have Arya, who's, half uncommunicative. Sansa, who's obviously not sharing anything that she's thinking. So like to have that be so permanent, and to have Summer die on top of all of that,
And no one
that was
seems to give a
painful.
shit about Rickon once he's dead. Like, no one mentions him again,
No.
which is a bit harsh.
Yeah.
But yeah, so season six, I thought overall was actually okay. It didn't bother me at all
Yeah.
in
No, I
general.
mean, like I said, they had a lot of work to even get me to like tolerate the show, and season six did.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, I don't know why the sand stakes still exist at this point, but.
Yeah, I was wondering why the House of Black and White let Arya go. Like, she kills the Wave and they just let her
Oh,
go.
don't get me
I don't
started.
understand that. Like, what was the point of her going through all the training if she was just gonna leave without becoming an assassin for the many-faced god or
If the
yes.
many-faced god does not send an assassin to kill Arya before the end of season eight as payback,
See, this is what I keep
it's the
saying. Like, so
biggest
she's
fan
just gonna
service
waltz off.
bullshit. Yeah,
Like,
exactly.
yeah. Also, not to mention the fact that she gets stabbed in the belly and then falls into a dirty canal and is like, all right,
And then still this.
yeah,
No infections.
take it off,
Yeah, so she better die before the end for so many reasons on so many levels. I agree. The best single sentence in season six, Bronn, your brother has decided to side with the cockless. I love Bronn so much. The cockless. I just love it. Okay,
Oh,
so
is that the scene? Wait, when do Grey Wind and Grey Worm and Missandei have sex? Because I really love those two. I ship them so hard.
yeah, was that in season six or seven? Maybe that was in
Yeah.
seven. Yeah, maybe it was early seven. But that was
The
lovely.
highlight of season six for me was Battle of the Bastards,
Yeah.
hands down. Like
That and the Hodor scene.
the way they captured the chaos of war in that whole scene, it was amazing. Really well
100%
done.
agree. I agree.
Yeah. And obviously the Hodor scene that is on
He's like the
that.
secret
The
hero
emotional
of Song
impact.
of Ice and Fire, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's just such a cool
Yeah.
name.
Sad.
And then you really, and then when you get the line from Mira where she was like, why did we go there at all? What was the point? Jojen died for that, Hodor died for that, and like what has anyone gotten out of that yet? We still don't understand.
Well, John knowing his parentage, they better fucking save the world.
What happened? Reed knows who Jon's parents are. Why do we need Bran to go to a,
Because we're not gonna
tree
see
guy
Howl
for
and
that?
Reed, or I don't know. Is Howl and Reed definitely not the High Septon then, or the High Sparrow, or whatever?
Probably not.
Okay. Colour me disappointed. Okay, on to season seven. So a bunch of stuff happens, and it was interesting. I was trying to make this into a summary bullet points, and it was all very disparate, which seemed to me a very key telling point about season seven. Okay, Arya poisons the rest of the Freys, heads to Winterfell. Looks like she's fighting with Sarya, but R.I.P. Littlefinger Biatch, helped by Tree Bran's evidence. Sam cures Ser Jorah. He goes back to Dany. Bronn is with the Brotherhood Without Banners and believes in the Lord of Light. Apparently, Euron wants to earn Cersei's trust, so goes into battle for her against Yara slash Theon. She then makes him co-head of her army and promises to marry him. Awesome. Euron destroys the Unsullied ships, who found an abandoned Castle Rock, while Jaime attacks Highgarden and the Queen of Thorns again kind of commits suicide, while confessing she killed Joffrey. Jon becomes King of the North, heads to Dragonstone, doesn't bend the knee, but Sam's told him there's lots of dragonglass there. Dany leads an aerial attack on the Lannisters. Tormund the Hound, Jon, Gendry, et al. Capture a White as proof for Cersei, which is so stupid. A White Walker kills Viserion. Benjen Stark turns up and then dies. Fan service. And then we get zombie Viserion. All crazy balls. Cersei's pregnant. She wants to use the Golden Company to, secure her rule over King's Landing. Jaime rides north because he's finally pissed off with her after like 3 seasons later than he should be. Theon leads a rescue for Yara. Sam and Bran together realize that Jon is a legitimate Targ heir called Aegon, and the zombie Viserion blasts a hole in the wall, and bad things come through. So that's like some of many things that are going on.
Tormund is still fine.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit going on here. I mean, I love everything. I thought Winterfell was really fascinating. Let's start there. I thought it was really interesting seeing lots of people getting freaked out by Arya. I'm a little bit disappointed the fandom isn't more freaked out by Arya. The whole Arya kind of stalking and being weird about Sansa is just very creepy and psycho. And even by the end of it, I mean, it's nice to see her kill Littlefinger. To me, it's a bit like the Walk of Shame. I'm pleased it happened. I'm getting my vicarious revenge. But at the same time, it's not right.
To me was very much like, that final scene is great. I actually just recently rewatched it. Like, I'm very pleased with the way it plays out, but I don't think it was worth all of the tension and all of the, especially because it goes a little weird, right? Like, when Arya initially gets back to Winterfell, it actually seems like she and Sansa are going to be okay. Like, clearly they don't understand each other, but they're kind of happy that they are alive and exist. And I was like, hey, good on the show for not like manufacturing dumb drama. And then like the next like 3 episodes are all this dumb drama of Sansa being like, holy shit, my sister wants to kill me. And Arya making every indication that she wants to kill her. And, and then the fandom being like, Sansa, why are you so against Arya? And Littlefinger just messing everything up. And, so I was happy with the way it ended. But I wrote a very long article about how like dumb the plotline was and like how it was basically sent each of the Stark sisters back to their original position, which is like, oh, we can't get along, except that now there's like potentially deadly consequences. I wasn't into that.
It was like, so Jaime doesn't get growth, Tyrion doesn't get growth, Arya and Sansa get growth, but then get sent back to when they were 11 or something. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it's just one of those classic tropes. It's sort of like Real Housewives, like, let's get 2 women who've become really strong and then let's just pit them against each other like mean bitches, mm-hmm. can they not actually work together? It was just also kind of like high school in some way. I really hated it.
Yeah.
And I also had a real problem analogous to kind of what's going on a bit with Dany, actually, but it's sort of, what does it say about us as a fandom that D&D think commercially it's going to sell to let Arya be this creepy and psycho, that this is like, Tyrion's really popular, we can't let him get dark, but Arya is going to be really popular if we let her go this dark. Let's see a little, because the Maisie she's not a kid anymore, but she still looks very childlike. Let's have this little psycho killer running around. And I find that whole thing really problematic about what it says about us as a fandom. Am I the only one? Or I don't know. Maybe I'm going too far on this.
No, I completely agree.
Yeah.
It's also, sorry, go ahead, Nadia.
No, I was just going to say, I've had issues with the Arya storyline for a long time. So I'm not surprised that I have issues with the show either.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's also like, again, it kind of goes back to that. Like, it's they kind of don't know how to make women cool if they're not either total badasses or bitches,
Yeah.
Like I love Brienne because of the residual love that I have for her from the book, but like, this Brienne is not Brienne from the book. The Brienne from the book is compassionate and like insight, like not very smart, but still very emotionally insightful. And this Brienne is just a badass,
Why is she even still around? She's killed Stannis, so she's got revenge for her love, Renly. The sisters are back together, and just fuck off. I mean, like, why are you there? What is motivating? It's like Davos. What is motivating you at this point? Stannis is dead. Do you just transfer allegiance somehow now to Dany? I just don't get it.
Yeah, to the next person.
Yeah. Also, Ed Sheeran, why are you there? That annoyed me more than any other storyline in the entirety of these three seasons.
That was funny.
Who is more annoying than any of these characters put together? Ed Sheeran. Why are you in my drama? Go
it's
away.
Not that, it's not that he was annoying. The scene was fine. It's just
oh, he was
Ed
annoying.
So,
he no, takes you out of it completely.
And
he
takes exactly when you see him, you go like, "That's Ed Sheeran." There's no other. You don't think of anything else. And
I don't know. It's like if you have a cool Icelandic band playing in the Red Wedding, like discreet, like no one cares. Ed Sheeran, go away, you ginger fool. It's a shame Ari didn't kill him.
Here, who was in the fourth episode?
Who was
a New York Mets pitcher who was in the fourth episode?
Springs,
he was a Lannister soldier.
Yeah, see, I don't know who that is, so I don't care, but I know who Ed Sheeran is.
I know who he is, and I didn't recognize him, so.
But that's the way to do it, right? To blend in,
yeah,
not be conspicuous.
Exactly.
I mean, the story is Maisie Williams is a huge Ed Sheeran fan, so they did it as, like, a present to her, and I'm like, cool, but
no.
Like, I didn't really care, but it was, yeah.
Just
honestly,
indulgent.
What bothered me a little too much about that scene, though, and maybe this is dumb, is just, like, we haven't had this like, gray perspective that George has about, you know, the Lannisters, and, like, we really haven't done that so far, and then all of a sudden, Arya stumbles across the only group of Lannister soldiers, apparently, in the entire army, who are, like, caring for their dads and expecting babies, and are, like, great dudes who just happen to be on the wrong side,
yeah.
And, like, it's not bad of itself, it's just within the context of everything in the show, it was like so writerly, you
so
know,
ham-fisted. And I love the idea of that sympathy for the common soldier, because basically they're all just humans, right? But it's like, and then you undermine it with having Ed Sheeran there,
right? And also having Arya not really take the lesson from that ultimately.
Yeah, so John, King in the North, so predictable. Song of Ice and Fire, so he's going to meet Dany. You know they're going to get jiggy with it. It's just like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why Davos is there. I don't know why they have to go and capture a white to persuade Cersei. That just seems
so that's so dumb. That was like they could the show itself.
Yeah, I mean, there are whites, like, turning up everywhere. Why did they have to go to, like, this one place that is, like, the most dangerous of all and get a white king there? They could have just found a dead body, wait for it to reanimate, and then come back.
Or, like, take somebody who's bad behind the wall, kill them, and then wait 5 minutes. Like,
exactly.
I know. And then just when it can't get more ridiculous, Uncle Benjen turns up, and then that to me was in the level of Ed Sheeran. It's like, Ed Sheeran was indulgent for Maisie Williams, and Uncle Benjen was indulgent for us, and it was just, no, we don't need to see this.
The Benjen thing for me was more confusing just in my head, because in my head, Benjen is Cold Hands, even though I know that George has said that Benjen is not Cold Hands. So it, like, kind of doubled down for me on how much the fandom, including the showrunners, are like, yeah, but he's Cold Hands, though.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah. Like, in my head canon, he's totally Cold Hands.
Exactly.
Speak to me of Ice Dragon, Lore Masters, Lore Mistresses. Is Ice Dragons a thing? Can
that
happen?
Oh, I love that.
It looked awesome.
No, but I love the whole dead dragon getting reanimated thing. So
I thought it was awesome, and then I thought there must be somewhere out there, some kind of Westeros.org lore master who's like, but this cannot happen. But can it happen? Are people cool with this? Because this is very cool.
I don't know. It's a dragon, right? They can animate they can reanimate any animal, right? A human, an animal, whatever. So why not a dragon? A living thing, dead.
I feel like, yeah, I feel like it's possible. Also, I mean, see, what I think is actually more likely is that one of the dragons, or at least one of the dragons, gets turned against Dany. Because I just think that dragon versus dragon is cooler than dragons all on one side.
Exactly.
You know? You've got to have at some point dragon versus dragon, or it's not going to end,
yeah.
Right?
So, exactly. Yeah. So I tend less, I mean, the funny thing is we've been arguing about ice dragons for a really long time because of the story, you know, the children's book, quote unquote, that George wrote, you know, which is called The Ice Dragon and is about that. So, like, there's been that whole thing. I'm like, oh, is there like a dragon in Winterfell that's like an ice dragon or something? I really don't know. I'm genuinely, like, very neutral on whether or not that specific thing will come to pass in the books, other than the a dragon gets turned against Dany. That's what I know.
Yeah, okay. So we'll find out. But I was not as averse to this as I thought I might be on paper because it just looked good. And again, that's what the show does well. I mean, it really knocked that out of the park. That was amazing. But yeah, a lot else of that North stuff and John stuff just and Sansa versus Arya stuff was and, ugh. Yeah, I just didn't need any of that. And no mention of Rickon and Bran just being a
All
douchebag.
right, don't get me started on the people who were like, Sansa passed the sentence but didn't swing the sword. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, are you fucking kidding me?
It's just
This man is
misogyny. The hard time that people give Sansa is just basic old school misogyny. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you. Also, they think it's her fault that Rickon died. I'm like, I don't even know how you guys function in the world.
How can it possibly be her fault? Like,
Because
how?
she turned down the armies or didn't get the armies and then took the armies, and it was some weird thing. And it was like, you know what? Y'all just want to hate Sansa. So, like, I can't.
Yeah.
What is interesting to me more in that whole sort of Euron kind of situation is, Cersei is pregnant. Do you think she's really pregnant? Do you think this is going to happen in the books? That once she's got rid of all her kind of incestuous babies, she is going to potentially have a genuine heir with Jaime? I don't know. What do you reckon?
Possible if, you know, we all know about Maggie the Frog's prophecy, right? Where she says, when Cersei asks about the children she's gonna have, and says 6 and 10 for him and 3 for you. And maybe that was talking about the duration of their marriage. I don't
Yeah.
Yeah, I tend to think that this won't happen in the book. I think that they need to give Cersei more motivation in the show, which is fine. I definitely think she is pregnant in the show. I don't really see the point in them faking it. I don't see the point in Cersei faking it either, since she thinks she can boss Jaime around no matter what, you know. So,
It
yeah, I mean,
makes Jamie leaving her worse in some way, right? Because he's also leaving his unborn child.
yeah. But also better because he's really choosing what's right for the world. You know what I mean?
Rather than his family.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, like his character's so messed up by now, does it even matter?
It's true. Yeah.
But
Yeah,
then
I don't
the
know.
show also had like Cersei had a child with Robert too, right? So they're disregarding the prophecy entirely. So now it's
Right.
fine.
I'm not even sure if that line was in it. They changed Mary's, I mean, not Mary, the Maggie's thing. So it's possible that they.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what that though.
Yeah. I will admit though, I'm totally fine with John and Danny. I'm like, you're both pretty, whatever.
It was going to happen, right? Like, I just feel it's a bit like R plus L equals J, or,
Yeah.
a lot of the stuff that we saw that it's kind of weird seeing it, but we always knew we were going to see it. So it was kind of like, I didn't like it because I just thought it was such a cliched fantasy thing. But, George can't subvert everything. Like, this was the big one that was going to happen. Because I think John is so stark. So seeing him become all Targ is just a shame.
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
Yeah.
Two little short people get together and have sex.
No. It's true. It's also like, I mean, just for me, it was like, oh, two people are having sex and they want to. Like, they both want
Consent dual sucks. I know.
to. I'm like, this is a nice change.
But undermined a little bit, and I tell you, this is another big problem I've always had with these books, and everyone knows my anti-dragon rants, but in this season in particular, is it this season or the one before where Danny raises the Lannister? Is this one where Danny raises the Lannister army, and I think Bronn and Jaime are there with a trebuchet built by Qyburn, and you just see her lay waste to her enemies, and you
Yeah.
see visualized what I've always been saying, which is that dragons are this weapon of mass destruction, and there's just no excuse for them. And this is what HBO does. It gives us this visual spectacle, even though you read it in the books, even though you imagine it, you see it on screen. And then you look at these people like the Missandei of the world, or even people like Tyrion who are still on her side, and you think, come on, guys, once you have seen this, how can you still be on her side? It isn't, it's just, it's beyond,
Yeah. No,
So seeing
it's
John
tough.
like macking with Danny, like this beautiful romantic capital R ice and fire couple, and this has meant to me our beautiful culmination at the end of these books full of sorrow and rape and pillage and death and destruction, and that these two come together and will set the world to right and will reign as a beautiful couple over the universe. And you just think, no. Or I think no.
Oh, well,
Yeah, but
I
that's
don't
never gonna
know.
happen. You don't think Danny's gonna reign? Good.
I'm not sure if she's going to reign. I'm still very, very agnostic about who's going to end up on the Iron Throne. But I do think that we're geared, like, this is the happy peak before the sad fall. Like, I do not think that Dany is going to take kindly to the fact that Jon is not only legitimate, but more legitimate and more in line to the throne than she is. And, you know, and they're related also. Like, I think, there's a lot of ways in which this could go wrong.
Do you think there's a civil war? Do you think John versus Dany happens potentially?
I don't know that they have time for that with the others, but I think that they might. I don't know.
In the book, we know there's a second Dance of the Dragons coming, but that's probably going to be between Dany and Aegon, or, you know, Dany and John versus Aegon or something. So, but you never know. It might be Dany John, though. Who knows?
Ooh. Any other predictions? Where is Melisandre at this point? Is she off to Volantis or something?
No, she has to die in Westeros, right? Isn't that what she said?
No, I hope so.
Yeah. I think that was her like vague thing. It was like, oh yes, I have to stay. Cause...
Oh, but the stag was so touching. You know, when Deva finds it.
Oh, oh God. Oh. Yeah. That was painful. Also, like, I agree with you, Bina, there's very little reason for Davos to be around, but I just kind of like enjoy him, so I'm just kind of like, that's fine.
You know? Oh, I agree, right? You know, I love that actor and I love that character, right? So he's in that category of people that, you know, there are people that were killed very, very quickly, and then there are people who are around you, like, you have no reason to be around, but that's okay. I think that's the whole thing, right, with this whole season 5 through 7. I think of the three seasons, 6 was probably my favorite of the three. 7 was the kind of more janky, but it's kind of like I'm in a very zen place of calm. I can take the set pieces or the emotional bits that I really like, and the bits that I don't like, I can very quickly now mentally discard. And I think I just needed that year and a half or 2 years off just to get to that mental place. And I really admire people who could get to that dissociative place earlier. It just took me a little longer to get there, and I think I'm there. So even the bits like now that I'm saying that are annoying me, they honestly, I just flushed them away very quickly. They didn't.
4 years, Dina. We didn't watch it for 4 years.
Yeah, it went by very quickly, I have to say. And on that happy note, I want to thank Nadia and Mikal for joining me tonight. I want to repeat my thanks to this entire beautiful community of Vok for helping Nadia and I stay basically unsullied, which is a huge achievement in the era of social media. And we owe it all to all of you who really did respect our decision and helped us to stay unsullied. So thank you. And sorry if we let you down by giving in. We're only human. Thank you, Mikal, for discussing all this with us.
Oh, gosh. Thank you for listening to my like ramblings from 2015. It's very cathartic, honestly.
Hopefully it wasn't like dredging up trauma to relitigate all of this.
No. It's good to look at it, like, especially, you know, with you two ladies whose opinions I value so highly. It's like so nice to kind of look back and go like, have a little bit more. I can kind of see both, like my extremely emotional reaction and then your guys like a little bit more sane side of things.
Just watching it with more detachment maybe. But you know, it was just fun, and it was great to podcast with both of you again after a long time. It was so lovely. So
thanks.
Hopefully speak to you all soon.
All right. Bye, ladies.
Thanks.
Bye, ladies.
Thank you for this, Mina.
So yeah.
We've been waiting that long for a book. Oh,
well, longer, right?
We've been waiting for 7 years, because it came out in 2011. Years.
But that's the calm. And then you realize just how much other stuff that's out there to read and engage with. It's so good. We live in a golden age of television. You know, I just ordered the Man book, A Long List. I mean, there's so much beautiful stuff out there that it's, you know, George has given me a lot. And it's fine. It's okay. I'm happy with it. I'm at peace. I'm not happy, but I'm at peace. It's okay. I mean, honestly, if another book came out, that's just a year of my life gone. I mean, this is a controversial thing for the fandom. Do any of us actually want the next book? Do any of us have the energy for the next book?
Well, I still want it. And if it's announced,
am I just talking shit? Am I talking utter nonsense? I don't even want the book.
You're going to go crazy when it's
now. I want the book, of course. I'm just talking nonsense. But it's one of those psychological things you do to yourself. Like, I don't even need the book. I have a full life. I'm happy. This is how I used to like be when I'm saying, I don't need a boyfriend to make my life complete. You know? Oh, God. The whole thing's crazy balls.
It's been so long since, like, we've had forward movement and since the story that, like, I need more.
I actually don't need more for myself. This is going to sound so self-serving. I want another book for the community because I do really worry about what happens to the fandom more widely in Volkmar specifically if there isn't another book.
I'm hoping that the that Fire and Blood will be fun to read. That's what I'm hoping for. I'm not hoping that it's like book level or anything. I'm just hoping that it's like an enjoyable narrative style story. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I want more than what we had in World of Ice. I want a lot more.
Like, I don't want more dry history. You know, like, George can write history in a really fascinating way, or he can write it in, like, the Rogue Prince kind of way, which is just like, and then this happened,
blah, blah,
and then this
blah,
happened.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm like, I'm not into that.
I mean, Princess and the Queen was really enjoyable.
Yeah. I mean, that had dialogue, that had, like, mystery of, like, we don't really know what happened, and, like, you get this from this dwarf named Mushroom.
Like, I just feel like George needs to get real. Like, stop referring to your work as a Silmarillion. The reason people go back to that is because they still have a completed text, which is Lord of the Rings, and then everything else, like, flows from that and enriches it. But if you don't finish your main actual set of books... In 50 years' time, no one's going to give a shit about Fire and Blood, I promise you.
Yeah, it's true.
She says exactly. Bitterly and meanly. I mean, I'm sure they will. And God bless you, George. But, I'm not reading
just
that.
On the practical level, I don't think this coming out because George is like, I'm really happy with the way this is. You know, I think it's coming out because his publishers are like, holiday
beating
season
him
is
up.
Coming
yeah.
up. And we want something with George R. Martin's name on it, you know, to publish. And he was like, well, I have this. And probably to get paid at this point, you need, you know.
Agree.
Yeah,
I think he's
and the
lost
publishers
his heart.
Are just grasping at straws now.
I don't
they
think
need
he wants
something
to finish.
To sell.
He needs to just. All I need from George, who's given me so much, so he doesn't owe me anything. All I need from him is the self-awareness and the compassion to say, you know what? I'm bored by this now. I don't want to finish it, and that's okay because it's 20 years later, and I'm going to hand it over to another author with my complete notes and thoughts on how I want it to finish, and let them fill it in for my readers. That's all. That's what I need from him.
Yeah, I'd like that too.
Are you guys TWOW preview chaptering? Actually, some people listening to this won't be.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put this in the after show, guys, so you can carry on listening. Do not listen to the after show, or I will clearly signpost it in the after show and in the show notes. So I just feel that Euron in the TWOW chapter just comes across as so evil and brilliant, and in the show just doesn't live up to that. So that was a bit disappointing, but that's okay. They're not going to introduce a sort of like final act evil villain of that magnitude. So I get that, but it was still just a bit like, meh, okay.
This Euron almost seems like a more real character.
Oh yeah, like because like book humor is something out of like Cthulhu, right? I mean, it's bonkers.
Exactly.
Quite literally, yeah.
Yeah, and this person's motivation seems to make more sense than the other one.
Yeah, he's
so
not
far.
Killing gods. He just wants to sleep with Cersei.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He wants control over the Iron Throne. Basically. That's well and good.
Yeah, I mean, good on him for trying, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Join the fray. Why not?
Throw your cat in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing will be like how that plays with Theon and Yara, because you know, I'm not sure where they're going with that, because they have definitely emphasized that Euron is a sadist, even though they haven't focused on it as much. But like, I don't know. I like Yara. That also kind of bleeds over from my very intense love of Asha in the books. So I don't know. I'm nervous about that.
She's also like, she is a cool actress and a character, and she gets some of the funnier lines. There's a great bit of dialogue I wrote down here. Danny, I assume your ships don't come with a demand of marriage. Yara, well, I never make demands, but I'm up for anything, really.
Yes, I ship them.
Yara,
so cool.
the other bit of dialogue I wrote down is from Sansa and Littlefinger. Littlefinger, what do you want that you do not have? Sansa, at the moment, peace and quiet. Don't try to always have the last word. Let's just assume it's something clever.
Yeah.
Oh, how do you not love Sansa
in
that moment?
Awesome.